It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 85% always is my co-host, Steven Brown. And Eileen Tull is here.
Hello.
It's because, well, first of all, today is Batman Day, and we are actually not going to talk about Batman.
Surprise, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I know. We've only done 9 episodes about Batman.
We've done a lot. Batman comes up pretty much all the time, so we're almost, we cover him a lot.
Yeah, it's like it seems like every 4 months we could just talk about Batman.
Yeah.
But we're actually going to talk about Harrison Ford today, which we've never done. We've been threatening to do an Indiana Jones podcast for 3 years.
Yeah.
Still haven't done it, and I don't think this is it.
I would like this to be a general Harrison Ford topic, because I think Indiana Jones is like, there's enough material to cover its own podcast.
Yeah, but
if Elliot's not here for that, he might get salty with us.
Yeah, he might have a rebuttal. Elliot Serrano, who is on the show a lot, might be very upset. But Eileen is here because Eileen is about to premiere her one-woman show called Bad Dates.
Yes.
Which is?
Yes, and the full title, Bad Dates or What Killed That Monkey in Indiana Jones Only Makes Me Stronger. It is a one-woman show about life, love, and Harrison Ford movies. It's autobiographical, it's funny, it's painful, and it's mostly about my Harrison Ford obsession.
Now, how does your Harrison Ford obsession start?
It starts with, as many things do, with Star Wars.
That's where mine started.
Yeah.
That's where mine started.
That's where I think most of my life has begun. I talk about this in the show a little bit, that my first memory of watching movies, and I'm, a huge media, pop culture, movie fan, fanatic, and so many people, everyone in my family watches movies, and I've watched movies constantly, and so my first memory of watching any movie was of Empire Strikes Back, and I have a very clear memory in my head of, kind of the sound popping back in and a little bit of static, and then Leia and Chewie are running through Cloud City trying to catch Boba Fett's ship. And so we watched Star Wars all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So your first memory is Empire, not Star Wars.
Right. It's interesting. Very specifically Empire.
That is the cooler Han Solo.
I prefer the gear and outfit in the first episode, but he gets the trench coat. Oh, that's
he gets trench coat
Jedi.
He has the jacket.
The jacket is,
and that's the coolest thing.
Yeah. I almost bought that jacket for like $200 on eBay, and then was like, I rent the pay.
I did buy the Indiana Jones jacket for $200 on eBay.
That's a good choice, though.
I've been wearing it for 6 years.
You got your money's worth.
Exactly. Han Solo's winter look is really the most, his Hoth fall outfit.
Love that they lived on an ice planet, so he just got some sleeves.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, same pockets. It's still, khaki.
It's all it takes.
Yeah, the tech officer's in, a scarf, and he's just like,
all I need is some boots.
Yeah. So Star Wars, and, I've watched Star Wars with my family. I have 5 brothers and 1 sister, so we have a big family, lots of different ages. But no matter what age you are, anyone can watch Star Wars together.
Yeah,
so,
that's totally true.
That's true, except for my son, who wanders away after an hour.
Yeah.
Right, you need to train him better.
Did you see Han Solo get frozen? I saw Yoda. That's every conversation we had.
It's heartbreaking.
Although on my birthday, my present was I get to put on whatever I want on TV and no one is allowed to argue. Which I think I'm going to do every year
from
now on.
That's a good rule.
So we all had to watch Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And he got so into it that I let him stay up and he fell asleep in Cloud City. And he was really into it. I was like, we finally broke through.
Yeah.
And then the next morning I was like, you didn't see the end. You want to see the end?
No. Yeah.
It's like, but Darth Vader and Luke are going to have a lightsaber fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured. That was it.
That's heartbreaking.
It hurts me.
I had a question. I lost it.
Okay.
I don't know. I was going with that.
Other podcasts would cut that out.
Yeah, we don't edit here. We could just give you the truth.
We used to. Now we record the day before we post these things.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of time anymore.
So, after Star Wars.
Yes.
When did you figure out Harrison Ford was not just Han Solo?
It was very complicated because we also watched a lot of Indiana Jones. And, you know, Indiana Jones is a little scarier. So, you know, we just had to really, during the finale of Raiders, you know, he's yelling, "Keep your eyes shut," and so were my parents. They were like, "It's too scary for you. You won't want to watch it." We were very religious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I really connected to that, like, Catholic idea of...
Well, especially Raiders.
Yeah, the wrath of God, it's getting your face melted off.
Yeah.
So you better be quiet in church.
My roommate is, like, we've talked, trying to convince her to come on to do an Indiana Jones podcast, because she's, like, that's, like, her favorite. Like, she, like, obsesses over Indiana Jones. And her family's, like, really religious. And they were like, yeah, you can watch Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's okay, because I think they have, like, they talk about religion, and it's very, like, respect it, or, you know,
well, I think because in the end, it's, like, the religion's always real. Like, even Temple of Doom, when it's Hindu.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, those rocks are going to glow, and they're going to burn your hand, and then an alligator will eat you. Yeah. That's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's this idea of, you know, it's different than, like, the magic of Harry Potter, which I grew up with people who weren't allowed to
read Harry Potter. Yeah, that used to be a thing.
Yeah, or, like, or watch The Wizard of Oz, because it's, like, witches and stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's the magic...
Or believe in climate change.
Right.
Exactly. Like, the magic that a woman's body is not her own.
Yes.
But, you know. But if it's the magic of religion, if it's kind of... spirituality, either vague or specific, you know, that's...
It gets like a pass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, it's because in Indiana Jones, you are taught to respect the religion. You're taught not to just grab and take whatever grail. You have to be very thoughtful about...
Belongs in a museum.
And exactly. Even, like, you know, his dad corrects him a couple times. He's like, "That's blasphemy."
I love that. I love the third movie so much because of Sean Connery and that.
All right, so here, this is my question. If you can't choose Han Solo, you can't choose Indiana Jones, what's your favorite Harrison Ford movie?
I think my favorite movie, not necessarily my favorite Harrison Ford character.
Oh, that's... All right, well, yeah, differentiate. Different. That's important.
I think my favorite movie would be Witness. Oh, no, wait. Or it would be The Fugitive. It would be...
Fugitive's pretty good.
Fugitive's really good. But
the thing that makes The Fugitive great is that you have Tommy Lee Jones
going
toe-to-toe with Harrison Ford.
Which is awesome.
And it's just so, like, beautiful. And they're two guys that, like, almost nobody can go toe-to-toe with.
Right.
Like, when you watch Captain America again, I keep forgetting Tommy Lee Jones is in the first Captain America.
And he's so good in it.
Yes. And he just comes in, he's like, "I'll take over this movie for 5 minutes, I'm gonna kick everybody to the floor, and then I'm gonna leave."
Right.
And then he just keeps doing it.
You don't need any character development for that guy.
None.
Because you're like, "Oh, it's Tommy Lee Jones."
Yeah, it's Tommy
like,
Lee
I'm
Jones.
Sure he has a character name, but it's... I'm like, "Oh, Tommy Lee Jones
General
is here
Tommy
now.
Lee Jones."
Yeah, there you go.
Oscar winner Tommy Lee Jones has come into the camp. But yeah, I think I love Witness so much. I mean, I love the any sort of fish out of water story, but I also I just love that the Peter Weir style of filmmaking where it just there's so many shots of landscape and beautiful tonal soundtracks, you know, and I just love the community that they create in there, and just this badass Harrison Ford kind of character who has to be Amish now for reasons.
Although he just beat a guy up that, like,
yeah, I know.
That puts ice cream on his nose.
Because then the Harrison Ford...
I've never seen Witness.
Oh, man. That was the first topless woman I ever saw.
Oh, congratulations.
Kelly McGillis takes her shirt off in that before Top Gun.
Oh.
Kelly McGillis used to be a thing.
Yeah.
She turned 38, you know.
Yeah.
She's a woman in Hollywood who turned, you know,
38. Is that like
who's not Sigourney Weaver or Susan Sarandon?
Exactly.
Is that the level? Like 38 is like, all right, you're 38, like that, you're out.
I think at this point, The Onion just came out with an article that was like job transitions for women over 30 in Hollywood, because that kind of seems how it is. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was like career counseling, and they showed like Cameron Diaz and like Reese Witherspoon in a classroom taking notes.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Because what is there to do? You're totally unappealing at this point.
Yeah, completely. Because who's the one who played Ma Kent in the last Superman movie? Susan Sarandon, right?
No, it wasn't Susan Sarandon.
Was it Sally Field? No.
No.
But it was somebody...
She just played Ma Kent. And it was just like, I shouldn't think Ma Kent is, like, hot. Do you know what I mean? And,
well,
like,
hey.
That she still right. has
she's,
it.
She's going to get hers.
Well, Marissa Tomei's playing Aunt May.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's but that's, like, that's what I said. It's like, they're still attractive.
Yeah.
It's weird.
But they're also people who are trying to find interesting roles. I think that that's the
harder
part. And we're getting better and better at their craft.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like the older I get, the more I notice that generation ahead of me is still really good at what they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look at they're not slowing down and getting ready to leave and phoning it in.
Yeah. Well, I think especially women, because they really have to be, scrappy about fighting for roles. You know, not to pick on him, but then you see somebody like Richard Gere, who I'm like, what have you done differently with anything in the past 15 years? I mean, he's doing rom-coms with women who stay the same age. He's like McConaughey-ing it with like Autumn in New York and like all these same.
Yeah, Richard Gere is like a guy who just plays himself in every
movie. Yeah, right. Michael Douglas was doing that for a while. Yeah. And then Michael Douglas got a little older and then he was like, I'm going to do crazy things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now he's like, I can do whatever I want. But they're different. Like Tommy Lee Jones has presence and depth and there's interesting things about him, so I'm like, if he plays himself, okay. It's the same with Harrison Ford. I'm like, you have such a history of who your image is, and I think that you are a fascinating person, whereas I feel like there's kind of a big line of straight white men who are about 45 to 55 who are not very interesting and who they bring the phone with them, so they don't even have to.
And I think a lot of those guys are in that rom-com or really before that romantic drama, mm-hmm. It seems like, which are basically the same, because neither one is funny or sad. It's either two people meet and one falls down a lot, or two people meet and one gets a disease. That's the difference.
Right.
Yeah.
But they weren't terribly interesting in their 30s.
Right.
So, like, Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford never made a lot of romantic movies. Like, Witness is the closest thing. And, he's punching out on punching out people.
Because he's still got a punch. I mean, his punches are so loud. I know there's probably sound effects that they put in there, but his punches are the best sounding punches. And that's, really speaks to my heart.
His pointing is the best sounding pointing.
That's what I was gonna say. My favorite thing is the pointing.
He points
I love it. And they did that.
Because you shut up if he points at you.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's his cut on Jimmy Fallon or somebody, I can't remember who
Conan,
did this.
I think. Conan? Had a supercut of...
Conan? He did that supercut where it's like all the points, and it was like, I didn't notice it until they did it. It was just like...
Yeah.
And then it flashed in my head of all the movies I've seen where he really does do a lot of pointing.
He does so much pointing that I'm surprised that none of
the figures
I have where you can switch their hands have pointing hands.
Right.
Yeah.
Every Han Solo should come with a pointing hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should. Definitely.
I could just put a gun in there and
exactly
hook the finger in.
Gun. Just have the finger go like this. Yeah. Just clip in a little.
But that's the thing about Harrison Ford that it seems to me, maybe because I like him so much, probably in a different way than you do, Eileen. But I also grew up with him, and for me, Han Solo was the coolest thing in Star Wars, and I remember seeing the first Star Wars, and then the second, but then when I saw Raiders, that cemented it, because Raiders to me, and I may have said this on the show before, was Raiders was basically pitched to me as, it's Han Solo just by himself.
Right.
I was like, so I don't have to sit through Wookiees and robots and Luke and Leia.
Yeah.
I just watch Han Solo go
around. Han Solo with a hat.
And Raiders is still my favorite movie ever made, to the point where I will defend every one of those sequels, and they're not great movies. Last Crusade is fun.
Yeah.
You know, Crystal Skull and Temple of Doom are very weird.
Yeah. Yes. But I do think, and it kind of speaks to Harrison Ford more than anything else, is, I'll still watch the Crystal Skull, because it's like, but Harrison Ford is like a grumpy old guy. It's still entertaining. Yep. He has a lot of great lines. He has a lot of great moments. It's good to see him back in that character. It's like, I'll take anything I can get.
I think that's why people are excited about him in Force Awakens.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, because again, he's so iconic. He's a part of everyone's childhood. I mean, if you haven't seen Star Wars, who are you? But if you haven't, then you've seen Indiana Jones, or you've seen Air Force One, or you've seen, you've seen one of his movies. You grew up with him in some way, because pop culture has embraced him so much.
Yeah, but is it me, or does it feel like he should be more famous than he is? Like, it seems like he should be a Tom Hanks or a George Clooney.
But I think in the 90s he was. In the 90s he was like, I think he was one of the highest paid top five kind of
Tom
actors.
Clancy movies, like Clear and Present Danger,
Air Force One, which wasn't a Tom Clancy movie, but he was sort of hitting a bunch of things. I think the majority of the work he does is like, he's got to pay for all the airplanes he wants to buy.
And then he crashes.
Yeah, then he crashes.
And I think...
It's expensive to crash an airplane into a golf course.
Too soon. I think some people in this room had a really tough day that day. Really
he had
nervous.
A hard year. The Millennium Falcon crushed his leg.
But yeah. Like, this is proof that he is a superhuman kind of force. I mean, that it was all of his accidents have been very harrowing. But again, you're like, he is a superhero.
Yeah.
Is this like mystical, powerful person. But I think, I mean, from what I have researched his work, you know, I think he wants to make really thoughtful films. He wants to be what I think is great about him is that he wants to be a part of every aspect of the movie. Like he meets with the costume designer and he talks to the set designers and, you know, he's not in the diva way of he needs to be controlling everything, but he really wants to collaborate with every single person. You know, you hear from people who were extras in The Fugitive that he, like, hangs out with the crew and he's a really chill person. But I think, you know, he's at this point in his career, there aren't that many interesting roles coming his way because people are like, oh, you're Harrison Ford. Like, let's give you Cowboys and Aliens. Let's get you...
Which still... I keep wanting to go back to that because I keep feeling like it's going to be a better movie than it is.
Yeah.
Because there's so much behind it. Like the original comic that Frank Thierry wrote worked, and then it was Jon Favreau and it was Ron Howard, and it was like Indiana Jones and James Bond in a movie. And the last time that happened, it was Last Crusade, and it was amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then
you just...
I haven't seen it because I just heard it was terrible.
It's not... I didn't think it was terrible, but it's like, it's one of those movies where like after an hour, you're just kind of shifting around and you're like, when does this end?
Yeah.
Like it just flatlines itself. And it's one of those movies that I find fascinating because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I want to know why it doesn't work, and it makes me want to watch it again. It's the same reason I watched Phantom Menace 8 times.
No.
I saw it 4 times in the theater in the summer of 99 because I kept thinking it was my fault.
Yeah.
I was like, but it's Star Wars. It has to be good. Let's go back and see what you did wrong.
I'm missing something.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, why is Jar Jar not working on me? What happened to me?
Oh, my God.
It's my fault.
Right.
It is. Jar Jar is a wonderful, wonderful, whimsical character, and my heart is too hard to accept him.
Ooh. Jar Jar, I still, oh man, I work with kids and there's a set of twins. They're so cute. It's a boy and a girl.
Are they named Jar and Jar?
No, they're not, thank God. Nor are they named Luke and Leia, which is good, but they love Star Wars and they know I love Star Wars. And so all we talk about is Star Wars. I have the best job ever. Like, we play.
That's awesome.
It's so fun.
It's kind of like your job, Steven.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
We just like play Star Wars games, and they like the other day we were like one of them was swinging, and he just out of nowhere we were talking about like school, and then he just goes, "You know who I hate?" And I was like, "Well, hate's a word that we shouldn't use in the movie." He goes, "I hate Jar Jar Binks," and I was like, "You come here and give me a high five."
come here, you beautiful creature.
I was like, "You can say that sentence all you want.
Right?
It's the only thing you can hate in this world."
Yeah, as a child.
As an adult.
No, I mean, like, but it's a child. It's like they're not known for their hate.
I feel like BB-8 is the anti-Jar Jar.
Yeah.
Where people saw him for 1 second and they were like,
crazy how much they love that little droid every time.
Oh, you know what? I said, I don't even remember saying it on the show, but I said on the show, how does his head stay on the ball? It was driving me crazy. And somebody tweeted me and said, here's a video of how the toy works, which is how the thing.
That's awesome.
And it's a gyroscope in there that has a magnet on top, and the head is held on it with a magnet so the ball can spin between the head and...
It's awesome.
It's so great. Well,
it's
the practical. You know what I mean? What I love about Indiana Jones in the original Star Wars trilogy is, you know, in a sense, like... I believe that all of this stuff could happen. Like when I was a kid, I was like, that's valid. You know, even the spirits that come out of the Ark of the Covenant, like the one that turns into like the evil, the like pretty woman that turns evil.
The angel
evil.
That turns into skull.
Yeah, like that's a real person inside a pool that they filmed and then adjusted. It's not all this like made up CGI like.
Yeah, and Tote was they created that like out of wax and then hit it with hair dryers.
Yes.
Oh,
time lapse photography. They hit it with hair dryers for like 3 hours.
That's a great effect.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
It's terrifying. I couldn't look, I didn't see it for like the first 3-4 times I saw it
because
I covered my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you do what you're told.
Yeah. And when I showed it to Ben, like we didn't see the end of a lot of Indiana Jones. I remember explaining Last Crusade. Because I didn't want him to see, you know, when Donovan drinks the Wrong Grail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was like four or five at the time. I let him watch too many movies too early.
Yeah.
But he asked me what happened. He's like, Daddy, how's the movie end? I said, well, he drank the cup, and then he turned into a zombie, and then a mummy, then he exploded.
Yeah.
He said, okay. And then when I said it, I was like, no one under 10 should see that.
Yeah, you don't need to. But he doesn't need to see that.
But again, it really instills the lesson of, like, respect religion. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be greedy. Don't be a Nazi.
Yeah. There's a lot of good lessons in there.
It's moral. True. Don't be a Nazi.
It's true. I mean, man, you know, we just, as Americans, we just love to see Nazis getting punched and blown up
stuff. It helps explain Hitler. Because you know what? My son asked me who Hitler is.
Yeah, that's
like if they do a joke about Hitler on something, on The Simpsons, and he goes, "Who's Hitler?" And I say, "Well, he ran the Nazis." And he goes, "Who are the Nazis?" And all I have to say is, "This guy's a foot Indiana Jones." That's it. We don't have to talk about the Holocaust. We don't have to talk about Poland.
You don't have to get into it.
We don't have to talk about the bunker. We don't have to discuss anything real.
Yeah, and that's a good way.
He's that guy that signed Indiana Jones' diary.
Yeah, and exactly. That's exactly what I would point to is like that'd be a thing where, oh, you want to know about the Nazis? Let's watch Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's a primer.
And I would be like, here's what, because you don't, like you said, you don't want to get into like the Holocaust or anything, but it's like, yeah, sure, here, they were bad guys who went to war against the world. Like, how crazy
is that? Great
that?
Norm Macdonald bit. Did you hear that? That Norm Macdonald bit he did on The Last Letterman?
No.
About, it was literally about that, about Germany. And he's like, Germany, they're angry because they started a war and they decided to pick as their opponent the world. And you think, well, that'll last, you know, 90 seconds or so. No, it's close.
Yeah.
It's like, so then we beat them, and 30 years later, they decide to, you know, they get angry, and they decide to fight again, and they pick as their opponent, once again, the world!
The entire world. That's incredible.
But I think that it really, like, it does, it's such a good allegory, because it's like, the Nazis wanted to take things that weren't theirs. They wanted to take the Ark of the Covenant, they wanted to take the Holy Grail, they wanted to take these things that didn't belong to them, and Indiana Jones had to stop them. And you're like, well, that's, I mean, a really basic way of describing global politics in, you know, the 1930s.
It belongs in a museum.
Yeah, the thing I love about Indiana Jones so much is that, man, he takes a beating in every one of those movies. More than most heroes.
There was some line, and it's one of my favorite lines they talk about how to describe Indiana Jones's character. And it's basically, he's a guy that is constantly getting in way over his head into trouble and getting out of him by the skin of his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great way to write Indiana Jones. It's like, he's not Batman, he's not Superman, he's not like Green Lantern or somebody who's got like a control of the situation. He is barely scraping by, just like a regular.
What's that perfect line in Raiders when he goes after the truck?
And make it end up as
stop
a go.
I don't know.
And it's, you know, there's no one else I can think of that takes a beating. He does.
I had a friend of mine who was a comedian, and he had never seen Raiders, and he had seen Temple of Doom and Last Crusade, and he had just never seen Raiders. So I was like, well, he was at my house. I was like, I'm showing you Raiders.
Yeah.
And I showed him all of it, and I'm like, this is, I think, the best movie ever made. There's not a second of that movie was wrong.
Yeah.
The mistakes make that movie even better.
Yes.
I think it's a perfect, perfect movie. And when I finished it, I turned to him, I said, so what did you think of that one? He goes, hey, fought too many guys.
That's incredible.
Because like every time he turned around, another guy was punching him in his bullet hole.
Yeah. Right. Oh, but it's so true because, you know, what I find in terms of superheroes, I find Superman to be incredibly boring because you're like, he's...
Most people do.
Right? Yeah, you and he's everybody else. Yeah, because it's so hard to write.
Which is why they announced this week about Batman versus Superman, the director Zack Snyder came out and goes, "Yeah, it's going to be more Batman than Superman."
Well, because, it's going to be more Batfleck than Superman.
Yeah, because people want people, and even if it wasn't Ben Affleck, out of the two of them,
people
when my son watched the trailer, he cheered every time he saw Batman and booed every time he saw Superman.
Right.
And then when it ended Batman versus Superman, I was like, "Do you want to see it?" He's like, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Because it all depends on the ratio. So Warner Brothers is literally coming out. It's like, it's 60-40.
Yeah.
Which is
insane. You'll get more Batman. But it's Batman Day, so you know, you have to talk about Batman. But it's, I feel like, you know, I want to see a normal human who gets hurt and who has to deal with that as they're still trying to run. I mean, that's what's so interesting about Indiana Jones is he's getting punched in the face, he's getting kicked, he's getting thrown under the truck. But, you know, you don't get a break. You don't rest when you're saving the world.
Yeah.
And he shows pain better than anyone else. So, like, James Bond tends to shrug it off.
Right.
Or like, even Tony Stark, you know, who's
well, because he's in a suit. He doesn't get as much, like, you know.
But they always tear that suit off by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, especially 1 and 3. In 3, he has no suit.
Yeah.
He's like, and he's got marks on his face the whole movie in 3. But he's, you know, he's still in a good mood about it.
Well, yeah.
And it's, I think that the James Bond, Tony Stark thing is to be like, you know, oh, it didn't bother me because I'm so fantastic. But Indiana Jones is feeling that. I think that Harrison Ford has the best scream of any person in film. Like, whenever, like, when that toolbox falls down and hits Han Solo on the head,
yeah.
that shriek when Marion hits him on the face with a mirror, just like that.
When the kid stabs his voodoo doll.
Yeah, it's so guttural and so primal, and you're just like, I
feel so bad for him.
Yes, and I want him to succeed. I want him to be happy and not in pain. But I think it's a refreshing kind of, it brings that realism to, again, the fact that you would be like in this situation, you have to keep going. You just got shot, but you got to drive the truck, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you have to keep moving forward if you're saving the world.
And maybe that's why I've always felt like Harrison Ford is not as famous as he should be, because he always seems to downplay the gloss and the glamour.
Yeah.
Of how he never plays into it. He's like, he always lives in Montana and flies his planes and he does a movie and goes away. When he does do interviews, he's pretty quiet. I think Conan was brilliant of, like, kind of turning the grumpiness of him into a character and playing to him, because before that, nobody wanted to interview him.
Right, because it just seems like he doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to be there. I mean, I think my favorite thing is, I think it is on, it's either Conan or Jimmy Kimmel, where, you know, people are asking Star Wars questions in the audience and Chewbacca stands up and Harrison Ford is just like, who let you in here? Get out of here.
He points at him.
He points the hell out of him. Yeah. And it is just so funny to me because he plays it so straight.
Where you're like, she was my wife.
Yeah. It's so good. And you just think, like, that must be so fun for him to be like, you know, he gets this image of being a little grumpy, but I mean, my God, the amount of lip service that celebrities pay and the, like, the amount of fakery and
that's part of the job. It seems like now every Hollywood actor is a huge comic book geek.
Oh yeah.
You know, every single one of them is like, oh, I loved these comics as a kid. Chances are if they said I loved it as a kid, they never liked it.
Yeah.
Right. Or they had an issue and, like, read it once when they were 8.
Or just,
like,
there's a difference between people like Samuel Jackson and J.K. Simmons, who were like, I want to be in this movie.
Right.
You know, like, J.K. Simmons said when they first put the wig and the mustache on him, he said, oh my God, I'm J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy who cared.
Yeah, he knows who that is.
Yeah, it wasn't Gwyneth Paltrow going, I want to be in a movie again because my kids are getting older.
Well, and I think for a lot of women too, you know, you see, like, a lot of young Hollywood ladies are sort of embracing that, like, I'm such a nerd, like, I've seen Star Wars. And I'm like, look, I have a Yoda doll in my apartment that I hugged goodbye today. So, like, I think we're different people. And I think that there's this sense of, you know, nerd culture being so a little bit more in vogue and people kind of adopting it as, I don't know, this sort of, I'm relatable, but I just feel like you have to be, again, you have to be honest about it. Like, if you are not a fan of something, to then adopt it, again, especially with women, it's like, I'm a cool chick who can hang, who can watch. I'm a cool chick who likes Star Wars. And I'm like, if that's, you know, if you do, then awesome. I mean, I'm sitting here wearing my Force Awakens shirt, so, like, I feel
you're doing a one-woman show on Harrison Ford. Yeah. No one is going to accuse you of not being geeky.
I went in to print my latest copy of the script today, and I handed the guy my flash drive, which is a Boba Fett, and he was like, oh, that's a cool flash drive. And I was like, yeah, I'm printing a script for my one-woman show about Harrison Ford, so I'm just, like, a walking brand.
Yeah.
Like, I really got it. But, yeah, I think that in general, There's a Hollywood, they kind of, people are adopting, you know, because it's the cool thing to do. It's right. Again, it makes you relatable to the people that are going to buy movie tickets.
Yeah, it's like an in thing, but it's also like you see a lot of, and I'm sure this is happening just with as many young actors as it is actresses. But it's actresses right now because that Captain Marvel movie they keep talking about making.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants to be,
like,
Captain Marvel.
Every female, I mean, Ronda Rousey, that Ultimate Fighter, is like, I'll be Captain Marvel. Like, And it's like,
it's like nobody knows, like, if you can act.
Yeah, I think they just want that paycheck. They're just thinking like, well, look how much money Robert Downey Jr. is making.
Well, because that's the guaranteed blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. And, right.
You know, you don't. We're still at a point now where unless you've made a disaster like Fantastic Four, which again I've gotten complaints, I have not seen it.
Right.
I don't wanna. And you telling me it's good, go see it, is not persuading me yet. Eventually I will see this thing for free and I will probably still hate it.
Yeah.
But unless you make a movie like that, it is pretty much guaranteed to do well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like we haven't had too many superhero bombs. So if you're trying to make a big movie, that's where you want to be. It's a bulletproof genre at this point.
Yeah.
Which we haven't had since.
Especially under like the Marvel umbrella of like, here are the movies, like every movie they've made has been a success.
Right. Yeah. I don't think we had something that's bulletproof since like the action sci-fi movies of the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, you could pretty much guarantee that when Schwarzenegger and Stallone were going to make a movie, it was going to do well. Yeah. I feel like that's what superheroes are.
But I think that we're on the cusp of that bubble bursting. I think somebody was talking about this, and I can't remember who, so I'll just plagiarize them. But I think that we're getting to an overload point where, I mean, I think that working with kids, I think that kids are getting less interested in new superhero movies, and they're enjoying the ones that exist, but I think that we might be approaching the end of that bulletproofness.
Well, I think we're starting to flatline.
I think we've talked about this a bunch of times. Like, we kind of think the bubble's going to burst. And
one
of the Bendis or Quesada or somebody said something like, what would it be like Westerns? They still make Western movies. Right. They just don't make as many as they used to.
Yeah, and Spielberg said a couple weeks ago, I think it's going to go the way of the Western. And people got really upset.
That's why I'm plagiarizing. And it was, as always.
And it was, as always, we're plagiarizing Spielberg. But that's true. And that's what I said. They still make Westerns.
Right.
They're not the big movie, but I'd say there's one Western a year.
Or at least every two years. Yeah.
But back in the 50s and the 40s.
That's all they made.
They churned them out.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Because the other thing we talk about a lot about superhero movies is who's left.
Yeah.
Right.
We've gotten live action versions of pretty much every A-lister from Marvel and DC. And now DC's rolling out everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
well, let's get another Spider-Man version. Like, let's do a third Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's.
And it's like, I mean, we've had 8 Batmans, and Spider-Man's the next most popular character. But you'd no longer have the whiz bang of, oh my God, that character looks like he really exists in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is long.
Like,
gone.
I couldn't catch my breath in the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie because I was like, oh my God, there's really a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because growing up, there was a Batman and a Superman, but there was never a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And we're making Deadpool. We're making Captain Marvel. We're making Doctor Strange.
Inhumans.
We're making the Black Panther. Cyborg is supposed to have a movie. The Green Lantern Corps. You know, we've gone through the B's and C's and
Now we're doing some D-listers.
You know, Guardians of the Galaxy was all D-listers.
Yeah,
right.
But that's the other thing. We've swung away from actors. Like Chris Pratt has a great career from being in Guardians of the Galaxy, but we still don't talk about Chris Pratt movies. We talk about Chris Pratt being in Jurassic Park or maybe being Indiana Jones.
Right.
We don't talk about, hey, what's the next Chris Pratt movie coming out?
Yeah.
And the last generation we really had, I feel like Harrison Ford was the beginning of that, where Harrison Ford was a relatable actor who was doing these action movies, and then right on his heels, there was Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
Right,
which then, like, threw the bodybuilder-ness.
Yeah, had a very different, like, type of defined personality.
Yeah.
But, you know, with them, it was like, you kind of know what you were going to get. And I mean, with Harrison Ford, you know what you're going to get. I mean, I think he's a good actor who can shade roles in different ways, but I think you do understand what you're going to see. I mean, I find that in a weird way, he's very similar to Jimmy Stewart. I love old Hollywood, and I think Jimmy Stewart, you know, he was the everyman kind of put into situations that were sometimes, you know, sometimes insurmountable, sometimes, you know, it's one man, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, one man against the world, that kind of thing. I think that he and Harrison Ford express themselves in different ways, whereas you don't see Jimmy Stewart punching a lot of Nazis.
Yeah, I always thought Tom Hanks was our Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he could equally do comedy and drama. Mm-hmm. I always thought that Tom Hanks was our Jimmy Stewart and George Clooney's our Cary Grant.
But I would say that Tom Hanks, I think, can escape into a character a little bit more, or he attempts to anyway. I think he does more like, I think Jimmy Stewart didn't do much to affect his appearance, voice. You know, he kind of showed up.
Right, he had his persona.
Exactly. And I think,
kind of applied it.
Yeah, and I think Tom Hanks definitely has.
Although Tom Hanks, also a great yell.
Oh, yeah. Also a good, right? Oh, man, you just think about Toy Story.
There was, I think it's in Catch Me If You Can, when, like, Leonardo DiCaprio was escaping, and he does this one, hey!
Yes,
like,
yes.
Like, oh, there's that, like, splash yell.
Right? And it's like a real yell you hear on the street.
That's your point, but it's like a very, Tom Hanks has that yell.
Yeah.
It feels like a trombone that got thrown into a pool.
Yeah, there you go.
While being played.
Yes, exactly.
I love that.
But it's so true, and... Yeah, I think that there are a lot of those. I feel like some actors are very lucky in that they can step on screen, and you already know so much about the character because of what you know about them. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. But I feel like with Tom Hanks, like, you're inclined to like him and to agree with him.
Yeah, I think that's the definition of a movie star.
Oh yeah, yeah,
you're
going
to see them. I always think the pinnacle of that is Jack Nicholson, and people would run down Jack Nicholson and be like, oh, he's just doing the same thing every time, and I'm like. Yeah, but you watch About Schmidt, or you watch As Good As It Gets. It's like he's doing a real emotional range, but he's still always kind of Jack.
Yeah,
like, he's not trying to do other voices and mannerisms, right. But he's trying to relay an emotional range of that character. And I feel like the best movie stars do that.
Yeah, I mean, he's not. And then there's somebody like Johnny Depp who completely does the sort of transformational escape, and like the Peter Sellers kind of, you know, not to compare the two, Peter Sellers, but you know, it's definitely like he's a whole different person every time.
Right. Yeah, I was just talking
it's just a different thing.
I was just talking to my dad about Johnny Depp, and he had an interesting theory that he said the problem with Johnny Depp is that he's too handsome. So he works so hard
to make himself
to be a different person. So because he doesn't want to be seen as this handsome guy.
Well, look at like Gary.
Because we were talking about Black Mass, where he's got like blue eyes. He's Whitey Bulger's blue eyes and
right.
Like, bald cap. He tries super hard. The problem is he's been trying super hard in the same direction for like 10 years. And it was like by Mordecai, pretty much the whole country was just like, we're done with this kind of crap.
Yeah, he's pretty boring. But like a guy like Gary Oldman, I think, where it's just like, I won't even recognize him in some roles.
Yeah,
and I think he's very much the chameleon of actors.
Yeah. But Gary Oldman,
you kind of lose him.
Gary Oldman had that arc where he was known in the 80s and the early 90s, he was known as that chameleon character actor. And then he started like with The Professional, started really chewing the scenery, and then like The Professional and Lost in Space and Fifth Element, where he was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and became really uncomfortable. And then Batman Begins, he stripped it all down. And maybe there was a film in between those
right.
that I didn't see, but when I saw him in Batman Begins, I was like, oh wow, he's playing it real again.
Yeah. I love him in Lost in Space. I love
that
Lost
movie's
in
so
Space
nuts
so much. I remember it came out at a time where I was like, I think I might have been like 13 or 14, so I was like just going to the movies with my friends by myself for the first time, and we saw Lost in Space, and I was like, guys, this movie is so good. I have an opinion about it.
Oh yeah,
my opinion's wrong, but I have an opinion.
Yeah, I was like, this and Godzilla are the best movies.
I think I was gonna say I did the same thing when that Matthew Broderick Godzilla came out, and I still like that movie.
No, John Reno in that movie is aces.
Yeah, he kicks the shit out of those
Hank
dinosaurs.
Azaria is like the quintessential, like, I'm the comic relief, and my name's Hank Azaria.
Yeah,
but then everybody else
kind of blah.
Terrible.
Yeah,
see, this is a generational thing, because I was old enough to look at Godzilla and go, it's gonna be bad. Still never saw it.
Yeah. I mean, for it's worth it for Jean Reno.
Yeah, I still
Jean
watch
Reno's good.
I got some good stuff so in that movie.
He was The Professional.
If they had called that movie like Giant Monster Eats New York, it wouldn't have done as badly, but they called it Godzilla.
I feel like if you called any movie Giant Monster Eats New York, it wouldn't do that well.
Well, you know what I mean.
You could call a sci-fi original
Just
Giant
don't
Monster
name the
Eats
thing Godzilla and then be that far off of the mark.
And, well, exactly. People complained about the new one because it was...
And that's
still
weird.
Kind of far off.
I thought it was like, it would look great. I thought it was like, it looked a lot like what you imagine Godzilla to look like. It, you know, they didn't do anything crazy in that movie.
Yeah, again,
except for, we're going to advertise that Breaking Bad guy is going to be in the whole movie, and then he dies in like 5 minutes.
I haven't seen that. Spoiler. The last Godzilla movie I saw had Mystery Science Theater at the bottom.
Yep, I was just about to say that. My only experience is like, you know, Tom Sover and Crow talking about it. I haven't seen the new one other than the brilliant Matthew Broderick.
Mystery Science Theater's back on PBS now.
Is it?
They show, like, every other Saturday night, they'll show an old Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I love that so much.
It's so good because I was in college when that was on, and I had just gotten cable, and my best friend would come over. He would stay at my house every Saturday night because he didn't have cable, and we would watch it. And going back now, I think it's the beginning of nerd humor.
Because
it's so dorky.
Yes.
Where, like, it's almost a little uncomfortable at times because it's before nerd humor got savvy.
Yeah.
Like, before...
Before the internet was really developing too much. So right. I feel like there's so much Wikipedia
and before guys like Patton Oswalt and Chris Hardwick or Mike Lawrence, who's a friend of the show.
Yeah.
Before those guys were able to focus it into a palatable way. These guys were just dorks in Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah. And just throwing it out constantly. My family, my brothers, I have two older brothers, and we would watch that. We'd watch so many episodes, and we had specific episodes we would watch over and over again. So we knew every joke, and we still will, like, say them to each other. My sister-in-law, one of the first times she came home to meet our family, she, like, sat there for, like, 20 minutes as we all were, like, just constantly talking, and then she turned to my brother, who she's now married to, and she was like, "I thought you were, like, making things up. Like, I thought you had original thoughts, but these are all references,
right,
from a TV show.
This is original material
where people are watching movies and making fun of it. Like, it's not even from a film; it's from a TV show about making fun of films, and you guys are then quoting the heckles that they." And she was like, "So bad.
It was too meta."
I know, but it's
when
so
I was
funny.
19, I once made a list of every inside joke that my best friend and I had, and it was like 8 pages long, and time I read it, I'd burst into hysterics, and there's no jokes in it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's right. Nothing you could make there's like an act
here's
out
half
of.
A line from Kids in the Hall, and here's 3 exactly. Mystery Science Theater references, and here's an old Blackadder quote, and here's a bunch of Simpsons.
Right, yeah, and here's like a way that someone says a line in a commercial that like is, again, it's not a joke, it's not
although
funny.
Although here's 10 jokes we would make about our other friend behind his back. Yeah. There was that.
Yeah.
Good list.
So real quick, Harrison Ford doesn't like Han Solo. This is true. Do we think Han Solo is going to get killed in the new Star Wars?
No, I have to say no because I have to live my life and I have to just be in the world, and I have to say no. I don't know. I'm trying not to read too much about the new movies.
I agree. I don't like.
You
to
terrified
know
Eileen with that question.
I know. I'm like having. I didn't want to shake anyone's world right now.
It's a safe environment.
It's like a spider just came into the room.
Right. No, I don't mind spiders.
I don't. I think no. It's that.
It's I mean, It's I. I don't know if I can live in the world.
What if Chewbacca dies?
Oh my god! Shut your mouth. Shut it.
Yeah, that's. I
feel like the only way you kill Chewbacca, I don't know why, but you shoot him with an arrow.
Oh my god!
And he just grabs this and goes.
He sacrifices his life for some. Oh my god! No. Next question.
Real. All right. Here. All right. So in the trailer, he has a leather jacket.
Yes.
I'm actually like a little salty about that. Because no, the leather jacket is for Indiana Jones.
That's why I loved it, because the first time Ben and I watched it, and I said to him, but he always quotes it, where he goes, we're home. Ooh. Ben goes, and then he puts on his hat.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
And then you just be like, worlds are colliding.
No, it would be so beautiful. Like if Han Solo, if like someone threw Han Solo a whip, I want to have a long life, but if it ends there,
yeah. What if someone threw Han Solo the idol?
Oh my god.
It'd be pretty awesome.
He throws Chewie the whip. There is, again, this is why I wrote a one-woman show about it all, but even in my promo picture, I have an Indiana Jones hat, but then I have like a white shirt and a black vest and boots on and stuff. Because, I mean, I don't mind that cross culture kind of thing. I think that would be pretty cool if there's winks and nods, because at this point it's a lot of the same people involved, you know.
Yeah.
That I feel like to not do it is just missing out on an opportunity.
Well, here's my question for you. Fifth Indiana Jones, are you in favor? Harrison Ford recast?
I don't think so, because only because we started Indiana Jones when he was, I mean, he was what, in his
late 30s,
40s? So to then cast someone like Chris Pratt or Bradley Cooper, who are of that same age, it's to be like, we already have that Indy. Like, that's, we've already gone through that chapter.
Yeah.
So it would be weird to recast. I think if you do young Indiana Jones, which they have done, but like, that to me is a place to go. I feel like if you want to make, I would watch a movie where Chris Pratt runs through a jungle in a leather jacket and rescues artifacts. Just put a different hat on him. Like, it doesn't, I don't know why it has to be
Indiana
Jones.
Kind of what Jurassic World was.
Right, I know. Yeah. I was like, I'm getting my, like, young Indiana Jones Chris Pratt fix. Like, I don't understand why it would have to be within that same universe.
But do you think Harrison Ford still has one more Indiana Jones in him?
I don't think so, only because, well, I know Harrison, and I feel like he, you know, he's somebody who does a lot of his own stunts, who wants to do a lot of the physical work, and so I think that he was, you know, he did a lot of that in Crystal Skull. I don't think that it would be to the level that he could perform those things to the level he would want and to the level I would be looking for at this point, because it's now been, you know, when was that?
It was 7 years, yeah, actually, 7 years. Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
And I, you know, again, as we talked about, he's been through the ringer lately. So I think, I just don't think he'd be able to run and jump to, like, in the same kind of way. Because again, the movie would probably come out in like 3, 5, 10 years. And I just think it would not be as robust and vibrant a setup if he was to continue.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it to be. A good friend of mine always had this great rant about A View to a Kill. Did you ever see the final Roger Moore Bond movie?
I saw it, but I don't.
Well, the thing he pointed out was he goes, Roger Moore can't run in that movie, where every shot is him stopping running. he always runs into the frame and stops.
Yeah.
So he only ever takes 2 steps.
Yeah, I mean, you just like, what was great about Crystal Skull is a sentence, but what was great
first
about
20 minutes
it,
are good.
Yeah, first 20 minutes, because you see him, and they very clearly are like, you know, I thought that was closer, this used to be a lot easier, like, I'm like, we're old men now, and that's fine. And it's interesting to again see Indiana Jones deal with the circumstances that he is a much older man than he used to be. But I never had a fear watching that movie that he would fall down and hurt himself. And because you don't want that in a hero. Yeah. You don't want that in a hero where you're like, I mean, that's why Richard Attenborough doesn't go to the pen, and Laura Dern does. You know, it's because she's like a young, strong woman and he's an old man. So it's like, that's...
Yeah, it reminds me of Christopher Lee.
Oh, where, yeah.
You know, when who just passed away this year. Mm-hmm. At 93, he's the same age as Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Or at least he was, and it's that difference of Lord of the Rings and Hobbit,
where
in Lord of the Rings, yeah, he's very active, he has a big fight with Ian McKellen in the first film, and in The Hobbit, the scene they shot with Saruman, they had to move the entire production to London because he couldn't get on a plane, and when you watch that scene, which is the Ian McKellen, Cate Blanchett, and Christopher Lee, so it's one of the best scenes in that film.
Yeah,
they open that scene with him sitting in a chair, and they leave that scene, and he doesn't get out of that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're glad he's in it, and he does a great job at acting, but there's still that feeling of like, oh, you don't have long.
But luckily for that film in that moment, that worked. Like, you could, I was like, I buy that he's just sitting because he's not,
yeah,
he's not in the fight.
But then you want to, like, roll down a hill and jump through a glass window.
And The Hobbit is a prequel, so it takes place before, so you can't. You couldn't acknowledge his age in it.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right,
they wrote around it. It wasn't like they threw in a stunt double.
They figured out how to do it, yeah.
Yeah, whereas I feel like, again, in Indiana Jones, like, it is all about that man running, jumping, punching. And I'm a big fan of, like, the British format of television where they're like, and we're not, like, that horse is dead. We're not going to beat it anymore. Like, we are done now.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, we're like, this horse could, like, let's prop it up. Let's, like, move its feet for it. And you're like, no, The Office, just go to sleep. Like, go. Take a nap now.
Unless it's Doctor Who, in which case, 50 more years.
Yeah, but that's it. But even that's something, too, where it's just like, they'll just make a new guy. And
right.
It's like, all right, now the doctor's this old grouch, and now he's this.
The brilliance of Doctor Who. It's the one franchise that has built-in reboot.
Yeah.
Right.
You never have to start it over again because you can... It you can, the sequel is the reboot.
So if we don't do another Indiana Jones, if that's it, then how many more Star Wars do we want? I mean, do we just get Force Awakens? We're like, all right, that's enough, Han. Like, let him retire and just go on to do.
Because we know we're getting like five.
Right.
Because we're getting three chapters and we're getting the side films. Is it Rogue One?
The ones started and then...
Boba Fett, is it?
There's a young
Han Solo one.
I've heard, yeah.
My feeling is like, as long as it doesn't suck, like, keep them coming. But
we've had 11 Marvel movies and they've been good.
Yeah. I mean, I have confidence in it. I am not a huge extended Star Wars universe person, but I am interested in it. I just feel like if it's made with good intentions and it's made with like, hey, we have a story to tell. I think if people write a script before they begin filming the movie, that's always a good sign. Good.
That's, yeah, typically, yeah.
Lawrence Kasdan is involved. I'm always pretty confident. But, you know, and I think that it's been a long time I trust Kathleen Kennedy and I trust all these people that are involved and they, you know, all these people that are involved have done good work. And I think in a way have also done work with integrity. You know, I think that there's a difference between creating, and I mean, you know, certainly they're creating big blockbuster films, but I feel that these people are trying to create good stories that entertain people. And it's not as much about like, I don't know, just churning garbage out just to get people in the Midwest to sit in the theater.
That's actually the best answer to the question we had 2 weeks ago of why are Star Wars fans so excited about Force Awakens after having three prequels, I think.
Yeah.
It's, you're right, it's the talent involved.
Right, and again, it's the people behind the scenes more so. I really do love Kathleen Kennedy, and it's funny, my best friend from home is named Kathleen Kennedy. So I really have such an affinity for
people named that.
Yeah, people named Kathleen Kennedy.
Anyone named Kathleen Kennedy is okay with me.
Yeah, I just really trust those people. But I'm always like, if I ever meet the executive producer, Kathleen Kennedy, we'll have a lot to talk about. I'll be like, I was my best friend. She'll be like, please
leave. Girl, go.
Yeah, that'll last 12 seconds.
I know.
We have Bill Monroe, who's on the show a lot. There's a famous bluegrass player.
Named Bill Monroe.
It was like very influential.
Yeah.
So I would clip articles out of Rolling Stone and mail them to him. And it was like, there's one that said like, Pete Townsend said, everything I knew how to play guitar, I learned from Bill Monroe. And I would just send him all these accolades.
Does Bill Monroe, our Bill Monroe, does he play guitar at all?
Not at all.
Not even a little bit.
So that's why it's fun.
That's awesome.
After about 9 months, he was bored with that.
Yeah. So that's not that joke only goes so far.
The joy of having a name like Eileen Tall. There's only one other Eileen Tall, and it's an older lady in Salisbury, Maryland, who gets really annoyed with me on Facebook. I'm like, then why did you friend me? She'll send me messages like, please stop tagging me. I'm like, I'm not tagging you. I am posting a status and it's showing up on your newsfeed because you friended me.
Right.
And you think that I'm not you, lady.
And Facebook thinks you're both the same person now.
I'm like, look, calm down.
So, Eileen, what is the worst Harrison Ford movie?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, there are a lot of movies that he's appeared in. You know, I think he was just in, like, Expendables 3 or something like that.
Yeah, that didn't do well. The first two were fun, but the third one I haven't even seen.
I will say I did not enjoy the film Morning Glory with Rachel McAdams and Diane Keaton. And I was disappointed by it because I was like, Diane Keaton, Harrison Ford, Rachel McAdams at like her peak. Like, you know, she's doing a lot of really good films and, you know, Patrick Wilson's super hot. So this'll go well. And
I hate Patrick Wilson.
Really?
He's
a Ken doll, you know.
Yeah, and the fact that they made him Night Owl in Watchmen and he's supposed to be like this schlubby, nerdy guy. And I'm like, this guy, which is one of many problems I had with Watchmen.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally
Then he was in like The Losers or The A-Team. Like one of those, and he was bad in that. And I was just like, I think, was he Face in the A-Team?
No, that was Bradley Cooper, wasn't it?
No, that was Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper. I think he was in The Losers. He was like, I think he was like the bad guy in The Losers, and I just hate him.
Weird. I always saw him in that.
In fact, I hate him so much that I found out that he and Kirsten Dunst are in the second season of Fargo, and now I don't want to watch it.
I love
that first season.
I hate Kirsten Dunst.
Everybody does.
Yeah, well, they keep putting her in stuff.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, I just got the San Diego exclusive Mezco Dark Knight Returns figure two pack, which is actually right up here, so you guys can see it. But nobody listening can see this.
So cool.
Google it, people.
You good people. If you don't know about these, Mezco last year started doing basically what's Hot Toys. They mixed Hot Toys and Marvel Legends into one figure.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, let's make a regular size action figure with cloth clothes.
Yeah, that fits really well, yeah. And he's articulated, and he has tons of gear. Accessories and gear. And the first one they did was the Dark Knight Returns, and for a while I wasn't going to buy it. I was like, that's really expensive. I have Mattel Dark Knight Returns. I have DC Direct Dark Knight Returns. I've got it. And then the reviews, they were like, you have to, you have to, you have to. And he started selling out everywhere. Some, you know, Batman fanatic, so I ordered it. And then he was incredible. And right around the same time, they did a limited blue with the yellow oval, which he wears in the first half.
Yeah.
So I was like, ah, I'll get that too. And then a year went by, and then they announced a battle damaged Dark Knight Returns with the cloth actually torn up and the mutant leader for San Diego. And I ordered it through the website, and I was like, you know what? They've never made a mutant leader. Like, it's a new Batman villain they've never made before. I'm a sucker for that. So I have to get that.
Yeah.
And I saw the price, and I was like, ah, I'm getting raked for this thing. But you know what? It's San Diego. They can charge what they want. And then now it's, you know, 2-3 months later, I forgot about it because they charged me 3 months ago. And it showed up at the door, and the box was gigantic.
Really?
And I'm like, this is a figure two pack. Well, you can, you guys, nobody listening can see it, but you can see that the bat signal there is the box for these guys.
That's ridiculous.
And I'm like,
that's a crazy big box.
And it was a box and a box and a box and a box. And it came with this polystone base, which weighs like 5 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just really intricate. And the figures are gorgeous. And they're, like I said, they're articulated like Marvel Legends. And they're detailed like Hot Toys. And you can actually see through the mutant leader's glasses and see his eyes behind there, even though you can't take the glasses off.
Yeah.
And he's got the very, very pointy nipples that Frank Miller felt like he was obliged to draw on that guy.
Delicious.
Yeah. All right, somebody finds that appealing. That's good.
I'm glad somebody does.
That's good. Yeah, two heterosexual men are like, why? What? What? I've been doing that since high school. Like, looking at that book, I'm like, why would you do that? Like that and the girl with the swastika on her breasts in part three.
There's something about mutant hard nipples that, just work for, just that danger.
Yeah, you know? There you go.
Well, you don't shiv.
Yeah.
You eat your heart.
About my next one-woman show.
Yeah, and they even re-sculpted the Batman face because they puffed up his eye. Instead of just putting scratches and, blood on his face, what they did was they actually puffed. And they cut holes, and the cloth actually moved over the wounds, but not so far that it'll like tear more and twist up. It's
cool.
Really, really amazing. And it's not a line that I'm going to continue buying. The next one is Judge Dredd, and he's going to have a whole leather outfit.
That's crazy.
And he'll come with a motorcycle that's also going to be crazily expensive.
Yeah.
Ooh. And I don't think I'm a big enough Judge Dredd fan to put down that kind
of
money.
Yeah, the figure will look awesome, I'm sure, but yeah. It's,
yeah, right. But they're...
It's not necessary.
They're really doing a fantastic job, so...
I went yesterday to Six Flags, which I haven't been to, I don't know, like 8 years or something like this. And
that up in Gurnee, Illinois?
I think so. And it's they had a new roller coaster. I don't have any problems with like roller coasters or anything like this. And I hadn't been on one in like a long time. And I guess I forgot two things about roller coasters. First, that you have to remember to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And then second...
You kind of have to remember that everywhere.
Yeah,
underwater.
But it's easier to forget on roller coasters because your lungs are like getting pressed into your kidneys.
Yeah,
like,
it's really tricky. I have to like make sure I do this. Like breathing's usually a reflex. That's a bad place to forget to breathe.
Yes.
But have you seen the viral video of the guy that breaks up with his girlfriend on a roller coaster?
No, that sounds like a horrible place to do that.
It's horrible.
So metaphorical.
I think it might be staged, but it's still like the guy's like doesn't want to be on the roller coaster, and she's like, have fun, and he starts screaming in the middle of it. He goes, I want to break up with you.
Oh my god.
I just saw one, there's like a giant drop type ride, and the guy is screaming bloody murder on the thing, and then like keeps passing out. Did you see that?
I saw the kid that threw up.
That sucks. Well, anyway, so if you like roller coasters, obviously you've been to Six Flags if you're anywhere in the Chicago area, or you should go. But they have this new one. It's I don't know how true this is because I don't know anything about roller coasters, but they're like it's the biggest, steepest roller coaster ever built. Is like brand new. It's called like Colossus or Goliath or something like this. And it's you go like straight up. It's a wooden roller coaster, And I thought it was illegal to have an upside-down roller coaster if they don't have shoulder braces.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't have shoulder braces. It's just the lap belt and then, like, new things that, like, hold your knees in place, which I thought, like, that... And I'm not trying to be offensive, but when I was waiting in line, I was the next to get in. I thought the guy that was in the roller coaster that was getting out didn't have legs because it covered the way the knee.
So that's how they hold you in there.
Yeah,
they basically and you grab your knees.
Right, it's very that's strange.
Weird. I don't.
Yeah, nope. So it's like really, it's the highest point in Six Flags. This thing goes up, and then the vertical drop is like almost like heading backwards down. It's like so like that's how like steep it is. It's unbelievable. That's anyway, crazy. That was. It's good for you. You know, remember to live. Enjoy yourselves. I had a great time.
Always breathe.
Yes. And then remember to breathe.
Just breathe.
As always.
What I have been doing for most of the past week, other than preparing for my show, is listening to the original Broadway cast of Hamilton, which is a new musical in New York right now, based on the life of Alexander Hamilton.
I've heard that's great.
It is. Obviously I haven't seen it, but... It's so wonderful and amazing and such a great thing to happen to musical theater and to, I think, theater in general. It's sold out for, like, the next 100 years. You know, I have friends who, everyone I know that has seen it has just wept and said it's really wonderful. And being able to listen to the music all the way through, I mean, first of all, it's such a diverse and beautiful way of telling the story. All of the founding fathers and historical figures, I think most of them are played by people of color. So it's this beautiful landscape of how America looks now, talking about how America was built. It's a hip hop musical theater experience. And I'm just somebody who loves rhyming and like the cleverness of language, and the creator and star Lin-Manuel Miranda is so deft with how to use like consonants and how to make words match together so brilliantly. So I've just been having a really great week listening to that musical, and it's inspiring. It talks about, you know, using your brain and your heart to create a beautiful world. So it's just been a really wonderful thing, and I'm hoping to someday see it. You know, it would be great to see it in New York with the original cast, but again, it's sold out forever. So that's really what I've just been experiencing with and nerding out with all of the musical theater people on Twitter.
That sounds lovely.
And your own show, Bad Dates.
Bad Dates, or... What Killed That Monkey in Harrison? Ooh, oh my gosh. What Killed That Monkey in Indiana Jones Only Makes Me Stronger.
See, I didn't say it because I thought I'd screw it up.
I know. I've never messed it up. I've said it so many times.
Where can we see it? You're doing kind of like a mini tour of most of the geek hotspots in Chicago.
Yeah. I decided that... So this is the first time I'm producing my own solo show. I've done shows in fringe festivals and festivals in New York and San Francisco and in Chicago. And I've done a lot of like one-off performances. But I decided with the new Star Wars movie coming up, and with the subject matter I think being something that people will be interested in, I decided to kind of take it to a bunch of different venues. So I am performing it in bookstores, bars, coffee shops, comic book stores, lots of different types of places in many different neighborhoods in Chicago as well, because a lot of the performing arts tends to be focused on the north side. And so I'm trying to go to different places. So I'm in Edgewater and Lincoln Park, but also Wicker Park and Logan Square. I'm in Pilsen, more neighborhoods that I'm not thinking of. And all of the whole schedule is on eileentull.com/baddates. So all of that information is there. I'm still booking other venues currently, and the run is expected to be over in November, but I'm tentatively booking dates into the near future.
Great. So as you said, eileentull.com is where you can find all the information on it. That's yes, fantastic. Indeed. Thank you so much for coming over.
Yeah, thank you,
this
guys.
This is great.
Yeah,
I love when a new guest comes over and I'm like, I don't know what's going to... It's
right?
It's always
yeah, we
good.
Don't know each other at all.
Yeah, I very rarely know what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So when a new guest specifically, I'm like, oh, it's new. It's I'm going to learn something today.
I hope I taught you guys. Oh, well, I will say one quick fun fact about Harrison Ford that I... I had to, for one of the events that I'm doing, they asked for some trivia. So I researched, and Harrison Ford is the only actor who has both, I can't remember the other insect now, but it's one kind of insect and a spider named after Harrison Ford. And it's, yeah, they're just named.
Like the science community was like, we love
that's Indiana the Harrison Jones. Ford spider.
Well, yeah, so this is
yeah, it's so funny because he does a lot of conservation work. You know, he does a lot of. I think he has an organization or he works with an organization. So he does a lot of like under the radar conservation stuff. You know, in other countries, and he's again, it's like it's not something that he brags about or that he promotes all the time. But in order to thank him for all of his work, they named those two things after him.
Incredible.
And it really is just like, you know, whatever the Latin is, like something, something Harrison Ford eye, you know, like yeah. is the name awesome. Of the that's spider. Awesome. It's so it's
that's
so
just funny. A snippet of the Harrison Ford information you will find out at the show. Exactly. We need to go to the show.
Yeah. Agreed, yes.
We'll figure out the best one to go to. Yeah. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the only feed for Caffeinated Comics because I need all the followers to come to me. but you can follow our Facebook page where I think we've already posted about the show and we'll post all the information on Bad Dates. Bad Dates also has a Facebook page that I have liked. I suggest you do the same. You can listen to us on Stitcher if you hate iTunes. You can listen to us on iTunes if you hate Stitcher. You can follow us at caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com if you hate everyone. and Steven, you can find?
You can find me at Camaras Comics, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.